On this episode of Baseball Barbacast, we explain why Ernie Clement is leading the American League in all-star voting, plus lollipops, Scottish fish, Buster Posey makes a fool of himself, Brandon Marsh forever wet. It's a stacked, stocked episode of Baseball Barbacast featuring Marlins broadcaster Jack McMullen right about now. Hello and welcome to Baseball Barbacast, the only baseball podcast in the world that thinks Jazz Chisholm should just go full Tony DelVecchio and start playing in a tank top. I'm Jake Mintz. That's Jordan Schusterman. And maybe we're the suckers?
Oh, man. One of my favorite intros you've ever done as I wear my 110% juice hat here on this early morning in Phoenix, Arizona. Jake Mintz, it is so good to see you. We have so much to talk about on this episode of Baseball Barbacast. We are going to get to Lollipop Gate. Has this reached gate level? What do you think?
Borderline gate. As someone that is currently sitting, you know, less than 2 miles from the OG gate, Water Gate here in DC, a city of scandal, you know, I think that the situation in San Francisco deserves gate a whole lot more than Jazz's sweet tooth situation. Yes. We will get to all of that, but we will start today with a shocking all-star voting update. That is our opener.
Ernie Clement. Ernest, right? What's his full name?
Erndog.
Ernie. No, is it birth name Ernie? I'm seeing full name Ernie. So I don't know. We'll have to ask him next time we see him whether that's on the birth certificate.
Born in Ernie. Bred in Ernie. Forever in Ernie. We got the second update for the All-Star balloting for phase one. Again, we refuse to get into the nitty-gritty of how All-Star voting works until we actually, you know, absolutely have to. And we're going to continue to do that. The upshot here is that the individual with the single most votes in the American freaking league is Blue Jays second baseman Ernie Clement. In the NL, unsurprisingly, that title belongs to one Mr. Shohei Ohtani. Two World Series superstars going toe-to-toe. This moment is the crowning moment for a player that we never thought would be here. Ernie Clement was a utility man, an afterthought. I saw Keegan Matheson of MLB.com, who covers the Blue Jays, said, he tweeted that when the Blue Jays acquired Ernie Clement from the A's a couple of years ago, that Keegan didn't even write a story about it because it wasn't relevant enough. And here is Ernie Clement leading the entire American League in all-star voting. What a thing.
I mean, there's so many parts about this that are amazing. And we should also have like a conversation about the concept, the meta of all-star voting and where we stand on it, because what this has caused, it's not the first time, but it's causing a lot of people to have strong thoughts about the voting in general, not necessarily about specifically Ernie Clement.
Rank choice all-star voting.
Right. Right. But let's stick with Ernie for a second. I mean, there's a lot of ways you can think about this rise up. We did this during the postseason last year, but the other way I did it is, I wonder where Ernie was in all-star voting last year. So I went back and I looked, and you know, last year was Ernie's second season. I mean, he played most of 2024. Like, he got over 450 plate appearances. Like, he was in the big leagues. However, at this time last year, he was kind of playing some third base. He had not played that much. He was hitting like 270 with no power. I looked, and there were a lot of Blue Jays getting votes, not as many as this year. But he was not one of them. Like, Barger was getting votes.
Not in the Santander, top 10.
Not even listed on any of the top anywhere. Like, I think, I'm not even sure he would have been like one of the first options because he just wasn't playing that much. So, but Barger was getting votes. Santander was getting votes. Jimenez was getting votes. Like, the Blue Jays clearly, even last year before they went to the World Series, were Canada was getting behind this team. This year, now we've taken it up to a new level, which is where we can now expand this a little bit further beyond Ernie Clement.
There are three reasons why this is happening. There are three reasons why a former utility man is going toe-to-toe with show. One, the Jays fans are voting. Toronto and Canada, buoyed by the success of the 2025 season, is super invested and interested in baseball. And that is a good thing. And so all of these Jays fans are voting a ton. We see Andrés Giménez, who is not very good, ranking second. George Springer ranking second, despite he's been better recently, but definitely worse than Yandy Diaz. Kazuma Okamoto ranking second above Miguel Vargas, who has been definitively better. Vlad Jr. ranking above Ben Rice at first base by a significant margin, even though it is not remotely close. Alejandro Kirk, who missed what, like a month and a half, ranking second for the catchers. Toronto, Canada, they are voting. That's the first reason. The second reason is that the second baseman in the American League, weak crop. Okay?
Sure.
Ernie Clement is not going up against peak Jose Altuve or, you know, Joe Morgan or Dustin Pedroia. Like, this is a light group. Yes, Jazz Chisholm, who we'll talk about, has been a lot better recently. Travis Bazan has been on fire. Altuve is off the IL. Ezekiel Duran is having an all-star worthy season. But these are not like big names having big seasons. They're either big names or guys having big seasons. And so when you look at the list of second basemen on the ballot, you're like, oh, Ernie Clement's hitting 300. That's a number I understand. Mm. Click.
Mm.
Third reason.
Well, yeah.
Everybody that votes is voting for every position usually. Like if you were to add up all of these votes and divide it by the number of spots on the ballot, like if I'm a big Dodgers fan or I'm a big Phillies or Braves fan, I'm still voting for the American League. Even if I don't care about the Blue Jays or Ernie Clement, I'm going to vote for AL second baseman, even if it doesn't mean anything to me. And he's the guy that was on TV last year at the end of the season when I was watching the World Series, who was getting a ton of knocks, right? And so that is why Ernie Clement is crushing this. It is a very unique confluence of forces that have led us to this wonderful moment. I'm genuinely happy for Ernie. It feels a little goofy, obviously, because is Ernie Clement the best player in the American League? I think Ernie Clement would probably say, I'm not. But this is cool. It's wonderful.
Yeah. And in point three, I'm glad you got to that he would still make sense as a pick for someone just kind of flying through and filling out the spots they don't really care about because of what you mentioned. I think
he had the most hits ever in a postseason, right? That is fresh in the minds of a lot of people voting for this. And like, yeah, Jazz Chisholm, who has gotten hot recently, who's in fourth, like, should he be higher up the ranking? Yeah. But like, hey, Yankees fans, guess what? It's not like there's only five of you, okay? If you don't like it, vote better.
Yeah. Let's just, well, okay. We'll do Jazz Lollipop separately, but let's talk about Jazz being behind Ezekiel Duran and Jose Altuve. Jazz Chisholm, Yankees fans, if you are excited about what Jazz is doing, obviously he's playing better now and he's an important part of the offense. This is a way you can show, this is such an easy way you can show your support. We know there's more of you, sure, competing against all of Canada. Are there more Canadians or more Yankees fans? I mean, that's an interesting conversation. But we know not all Canadians are voting. The one other thing I will say about the Blue Jays voting, and yes, some of these results, if Vlad Jr., I could see a situation where Vlad Jr. pulls like a Julio, where he's like, thanks, but I'm obviously not an all-star this year, so I'm going to go hang out with my family, and Ben Rice, you can be the first baseman. Or I could see Vlad Jr. being like, I'm Vlad Jr., I love being out there hanging out with my family in an all-star game, so of course I'm going to go.
The Derby turns him around. Oh.
Sure. Oh, yeah. Regardless, I also love that Blue Jays fans are still riding this high when they're not even playing well, right? It's not even like that they've sustained this momentum. They're still like, well, yeah, no, we still love these players, including some players that just got here, like Kazuma Okamoto or Jesus Sanchez being in the top 10 among American League outfielders. And I know he's
like the idea that so. I like the idea that Bo Bichette is artificially high because Blue Jays fans are saying thank you for the memes.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, yeah. Doesn't really show up in the voting, which is funny.
No, it doesn't.
Because he's been so
very
bad.
Very much.
I wonder if Bo Bichette was having a normal Bo Bichette season, would he be like way further ahead than you'd expect? Because no fans is like, you know what? Well, I got to pick him over Muncy. Let's pivot to Jess.
Sure.
For those of you who did not see, Jazz Chisholm played baseball with a lollipop in his mouth this week. This was actually the second time he's done this year. Earlier in the season, he had a lollipop in with the stick poking out while taking an at bat. This is when it was cold outside. He was rocking the balaclava. But this week, it was very obvious. You know, he was moving the thing around. It was, you saw it on the broadcast. It was overt. It was unmissable. And then that obviously, believe it or not, was polarizing for people. This guy needs to respect the game. Aaron Boone, skipper of the Yanks, was asked about it on Jonathan Boy Media yesterday and kind of approached it with a serious tone. It was like, yeah, we're going to clean that up. Like, we got to clean that up. Oh, I'm going to talk to Jazz about it. Fast forward to yesterday's game. Jazz hits a big homer. After hitting the homer, goes into the dugout, takes the carton of lollipops and shakes it at the camera. Aaron Boone is asked about it post-game. Aaron Boone's like, yeah, happy for the lollipop kid. He can do anything he wants. He can have as many lollipops as he wants as long as he has them in a dugout. This entire thing, maybe we could save it for an Ugla. This is so delightful.
I mean, the dynamic of Jazz, as this, none of this is new, right? Jazz is just going to do his thing. And if his thing that day happens to be, oh, I'm going to have a lollipop. I don't know if you saw what Jazz said about this, but his answer about why he was asked, like, did you realize you had it with you? And he was like, I was trying to finish it. He was like, I was trying to finish it so that people wouldn't notice. And he was like, my teeth weren't cooperating. And so I was just like, All right, I guess I have this lollipop.
So let's talk about Jazz the character. Because obviously, if you told George Steinbrenner, former Yankees owner, that there was a Bahamian second baseman with cornrows who barely put the hat on his head and had more ice than Antarctica, and was, you know, sucking on a lollipop during the game, he would turn over in his grave 10 times. And it is perhaps a good thing that our sport and that this franchise, this organization, this institution has evolved enough to accept, and not only accept, but to embrace a player like Jazz. Now, it is all related to how well he's hitting at a given point in time. If he was doing this in mid-April when he was swinging a pool noodle bat, it obviously would have played differently. But I think the thing to understand about Jazz is that, yeah, he is polarizing around the league. People on other teams are like, who is this guy? Who does he think he is? For the Yankees, for this specific place, I think this energy of him being a goofball, of him doing a new bit every week, of him being a social media influencer slash troll slash character that also happens to play second base is kind of a positive for the Yankees. Having been around the Yankees for a number of years, there's this dynamic that exists in the Bronx where the whole operation feels so important. There is a weight to it, a gravity. And that gravity, about once a season, can smother a player. It just like picks a guy, whether it's like DJ LeMahieu or Aaron Hicks or Joey Gallo or IKF or Sonny Gray. And it's like, you're my victim for the season. It's like the freaking Demogorgon from Stranger Things. I choose you. The weight of history will swallow you now. And what Jazz kind of is doing, and he's not doing this on purpose, he's just a goofball. But the output, the upshot of this is like, everyone's loose. Everyone's giggling. The reporters that are covering this team on a daily basis, instead of like overanalyzing every Anthony Volpe at bat, are just latching on
a
new Jazz Chisholm. But it's not the A, yes. I understand, but it's not the A story. Now, again, the Yankees are winning. It makes everything easier. They're winning without Jazz, like whatever. But when Jazz is like releasing a new comedy special once a week, that sucks up the oxygen in the public. And that's a positive thing. Now, look, would this be different if Jazz was the most important player on my team? Yes. Do I think that this could, in some way, his antics, which we like, negatively impact his free agency? I think maybe, because when we're talking about the amount of money that he's going to get, Jordan, we're talking about ownership buy-in. Do I think that some crunchy old, you know, white octogenarian is going to be like, do I really want the guy that's sucking on lollipops? Maybe, maybe not. But I think for this place at this time, Jazz Chisholm doing this shtick, is a lollipop joke. It's great. It's wonderful. Now, if he stops hitting, it all changes. But for now, as we saw with Aaron Boone's response, as long as he keeps hitting like this, this is great.
Yeah, but I think the two points I would just want to emphasize, one is that it is, like I said, it's not a shtick. He, Jazz is, whether you like it or not, is as authentic as you're really ever going to see. There is nothing that is going to happen. And by the way, this is something we've been talking about since he got there, which is what makes it compelling.
This is something because we were like, been all right, talking about well, since we were with him in the Bahamas. When we, I've so this vivid memory, we were with him in the Bahamas at the Home Run Derby. And we're at the like the celebrity softball game the night before. And Jazz, who's home in the Bahamas for the first time in years, shows up, I think, with like a little dog. And he's just like holding the dog, like walking around the outfield during the game with the dog. He puts the dog down. Dog starts scurrying and like running loops around the outfield. And it's just like, oh, it's just Jazz. You know, like, does he ham it up? Absolutely. But it is authentic, you know?
Yeah.
He but knows where the camera is. He knows where the camera is, right?
Yes, like yes.
But he is just doing what he's always doing at camera one.
That part is true. But the other point I'll just say is to just bring it back to Boone and your point about the perception of the Yankees and how it could probably benefit to have any sort of flair personality. And clearly, and it's as you mentioned, it's easier now when he's producing and he's hitting these big home runs that afterwards Boone's in a good mood and he can say, yeah, we love Jazz. He can do whatever he wants. And that's probably not actually how he feels 100% of the time. However, I do think that there is an element that Boone has slowly, since he got there, Jazz has slowly won him over. I do think that that has happened. And I think that's also a beautiful thing.
Absolutely.
Like, I think that Boone has realized, oh, this is, we could use this. This is something that we don't have that now we do. And he's also good. And so let's embrace it and let's tell him, do your thing, Jazz. Yeah. And of course, if I have to go to him behind the scenes and be like, hey, dude, don't go out there and swallow a lollipop while you're playing second base, that'd be both stupid and dangerous. But other than that, like, whatever. He's a great player. He's not the most important player. Yeah. And you get to have this balance. And I think it's been really cool. And just thinking about how we thought when he first went to the Yankees and we were like, oh, no, are they going to like, you know, put Jazz in a box. Are they going to, and it's like, no, you can't do that. Nobody's going to do that to him ever. And right. I think now we're seeing a good balance of that, which is fun.
Last point before we get to our guest. Really interesting conversation to be had here, but food and oral fixations on the baseball field. The idea that sunflower seeds and gum and dip and Zins are all like culturally permissible. Whereas, you know, a dum-dum makes you look like a dum-dum. Like, that is interesting. Like, what's the line there? Can Jazz have a corn dog? Can he have a sandwich, right? Can he have, like, one of those really delicious chocolate-covered cherries from Trader Joe's, no free ads? You know, I know those are up your alley. But it's just, like, why is this, like, not okay? Why is that weird? But, you can have enough tobacco in your mouth to, you know, kill a horse. It's just like, what a bizarre sport that we live in.
Yeah.
And that is something I love about baseball. No pro sport enables snacking at a higher level than ours. Mm-hmm. All right, Jordan, let's go to our guest. I'm very excited about this. The fighting fish. Forget Swedish fish. We're going to talk about Scottish fish. Because the Miami Marlins are not just one of the hotter teams in the sport. They are having a damn good time at the Depot, and we're going to have Marlins play-by-play boy Jack McMullen on to tell us all about it in a moment.
Welcome back to Baseball Barbacast. We now welcome in a very special guest, friend of the show. This guy knows ball and this guy knows fish. And now this guy knows bagpipes. It's Jack McMullen, radio voice of the Miami Marlins. Jack, welcome to Baseball Barbacast.
I appreciate you guys. Now, what's your criteria for very special guest as opposed to just guest?
we like you, know, you
yeah.
and we have your phone number, I think that elevates you to a slightly different tier of very special guest. It's like how I remember back. Go ahead.
No. I mean, that's freaking awesome. I love hitting the criteria very special. This is great.
Jack, you were in the building at Lone Depot Park, as you often are, but this was you a little bit different. This was a little bit of a different assignment on Monday night with the Texas Rangers in town. And with all due respect to the Marlins fan community and the normal fan, this was usually not going to be a time when the ballpark was going to be bumping. Is Monday against the Rangers, right? That is probably not one where you're circling and being like, this is going to be one of the best fan atmospheres of the year. However, FIFA has graced you with an opportunity, a once-in-a-lifetime chance to call a baseball game with thousands of Scots in the seats around the ballpark. So tell us about it. What was it? Did it influence your... yeah. Was it fun? Was it distracting? Were they like... Were the bagpipes coming through your calls? Like, how did this go?
So it was absolutely freaking awesome. And I wish that they were there every game. And Tyler Phillips, who started the game, noted face slapper before he enters the ball game, said, I kind of want them to be at every single ball game moving forward. I think outside of opening day was the highest attended weekday game at the ballpark this year. It was apparently food and beverage sales were up there with like any weekend game that the Marlins have had. And they had like 9,000 Scottish people there. It was great. I'm privileged to report that Lone Depot Park did not run out of beer. They prepped, wow. They ordered extra beer, and they didn't run out, which was awesome. But like the run of show was really cool. They started at a bar in Little Havana called Ball and Chain, like right on Calle Ocho. And the Scots, they marched with Billy the Marlin on an ATV leading the way with the bagpipers. They marched from Calle Ocho for 30 minutes to Lone Depot Park. You guys have seen it during the WBC, that West Plaza right outside the ballpark where you can hang out and there's like live music and a bunch of stuff out there. I mean, they had a live performance of like No Scotland, No Party. They had all that stuff going on. I popped out there for a second before our pregame show began, and you can hardly budge. It was full of sweaty, drunk Scots at 5 p.m. ahead of a 6:40. And then they all made their way into the ballpark for a 6:40. And it's so cool because I was talking to Jared Sandler, who does really good stuff on the TV and radio side for the Rangers. And the Texas Rangers happened to be the opponent at Fenway when the Scots took over Fenway Park as well. And he said he went and sat out there for an inning. And one of them was like, this is so awesome. I love it. How can you tell what the score is? And I've been seeing more and more interviews from like the BBC and outlets like that at Lone Depot Park. And they had no idea what was going on. And you could kind of tell. But the chants were there and the bagpipes were there. There was a ball hit down the left field line that was like 5 feet foul. But it would have been, if it landed in fair territory, like a two-run double, would have played it a couple of runs for the Marlins. And because they saw the ball drop, you heard this little roar of applause because they were like, oh, this works. But they didn't realize that it was a foul ball. So it was just
no foul territory in cricket.
Nothing, man. Nothing. So it was just so much fun. It was I want to say once in a lifetime environment to call a baseball game in, but I really hope we get this again. And that Tartan Army, man, I'm rooting for them against Brazil on Wednesday night. No doubt about it.
Yeah. I mean, that unique combination of enthusiasm, passion, but also confusion and naivety, right? Right. You know, you say if you have an intense crowd where we've referenced already leading up to this and just thinking about this. And like, again, we were just there for the WBC and those crowds were unbelievable. But those are the most baseball knowledgeable and baseball passionate fans. But I bring that up because those crowds were also reacting to things in ways that normal crowds during the MLB season do not, because the stakes were heightened and because they cared a lot. But obviously that was still in line with what was happening, because it's like, okay, their team got an out. Even if it was the bottom of the first, they were still going nuts. In this case, that example you just gave is so perfect about just seeing the ball not be caught in the air. Because if you are trying to explain baseball to someone that doesn't know anything, you try and say like, well, yeah, if they catch it, it's an out. So they're like, well, you didn't catch it. Let's go. Let's go crazy.
Exactly, dude. I mean, it was so much fun to just kind of watch like the minutia of a baseball game unfold. And it was kind of a pitcher's duel for the first bid. Like, lost on Tartan Army night was Kumar Rocker punched out 9. Like, Rocker looked as good as he had all season long for Texas. And it's like, you try explaining to a drunk Scott who's like 5 pints in. And it's like, you know what? This guy's slider is really weird. It's got deceptive downer shape and it's 83 as opposed to like 86. I just don't think they're going to compute that. But that's okay because they're just going to pour themselves another beer.
It's just a that boy nice situation. How did they sustain in the Miami Heat? Because when they were in Boston, it's a more relatively temperate environment. When you're in Miami in June, that is not for the feeble. Day drinking in that atmosphere requires, I mean, that's a road game for them, right? Like in Edinburgh and Glasgow and Aberdeen, it's not getting pea soup humid. So did you see them sustaining that energy deep into the night?
You know, I think that they can just turn to another pint to keep them going. It's like, I never really got into the Fortnite thing, but it's like the blue juice that they would drink, right? To kind of recharge.
The chug jug.
It seemed like they could just turn to the chug jug whenever they need. I think that they relied on that for the most part. I will say I'm a huge fan of the term lights on, no one's home. I saw a lot of people that fit that criteria at a certain point. But unfortunately, I didn't follow them out of the ballpark. I don't know what they did there, but we've got this. So the concourse beyond the outfield wall, we've got this Budweiser deck in left center. And you may famously remember that from the Derby when the Marlins hosted the All-Star game in like 2017, I want to say. And Giancarlo and Judge, they were just peppering that Budweiser deck and the window panels beyond the wall. Like that area there was zero room to maneuver out there. I mean, there were people body surfing. There were people standing on shoulders and starting chants. So I think when in doubt, as soon as you start to get sweaty and tired, you just turn to another lager.
It is something. There's something so beautiful to me about it, right? That the Scots are combining the alcohol consumption but they're doing it without like feeling threatening to people. Do you know what I mean? I think that usually when there's this throng of drunk, sweaty men, that is dangerous. And these people don't feel dangerous. Now, perhaps that is because they're wearing kilts and bagpiping, but I think that is what impressed me has impressed me the most is that like they don't feel threatening in a way that they almost should, right? Like instead it's joyful.
I think outside of when I met you guys, this was the first time since then that I felt the burning desire to be someone's friend. Like I felt the burning desire to be the Scottish friend. And you know what? You guys, I like to think I haven't screwed that up just yet. But no, I mean, these guys, all I want to do is just give them like a sweaty hug and just start screaming with them because it's really fun. Like they yell more than any group of people that I've ever been around before in my life. And it's kind of fun because it's like intrusive thoughts, but they're all good and they win all the time. Where as soon as something pops into your mind, you just start yelling and you cheers and you put your glass up and you keep on going. So that was so much fun out there, man. And getting that environment at the ballpark was ridiculous.
Now, it certainly helps that no Scotland, no party, no Marlins, no party. You are play-by-playing. That's a verb now. For a ball club that has been the league's best over a last few week stretch. The June fish, baby. The Scottish fish. What has gone well? For people that are not watching this team day in, day out, if you had the elevator pitch for the June fish, what would it be?
They got some all-stars. Otto Lopez should be the starting shortstop for the National League in Philly. in mid-July. Xavier Edwards is playing like an all-star caliber second baseman. Hasn't been long, but Joe Mack has looked like one of the better young catchers in Major League Baseball. Mm-hmm. Kyle Stowers is starting to swing it again, and he's really starting to hit the ball with authority. Owen Casey is starting to hit the ball with authority. Liam Hicks, when he's healthy, he just hit the IL. Should be a short stay for him. Imaging came back clean, but Hicks is one of the top RBI guys in the National League. And honestly, what I would tell you about the June Marlins is they are pitching without two starting pitchers. They were effectively down to 2.5 starting pitchers. I mean, they were running out of bullpen day. Ryan Gusto was throwing usually a turn and a half through the lineup. Tyler Phillips was building out to become a starting pitcher. His last time out, he went 6 innings, a 2-run ball. But it was just Sandy and Max Meyer every turn that you could rely on to be quality starting pitchers. Yuri Perez went down with this hamstring issue. The initial timeline to return we got was like August. He's back on Wednesday against DeGrom. And then Jansen Junk has been out for a little bit.
That's crazy because his hamstrings are so big.
Right? Like, it's just nuts, man. It was kind of a weird injury. Like, I had never heard of the gracilis tendon before, but that's what he messed up. And he's apparently all good, and he beat the timeline. He was able to throw right away, and then he was nasty in his rehab outing. But I don't know. It's been cool to see this without Yuri and Junk, but they've been best in baseball in terms of staff ERA. That bullpen's nasty. And I've had conversations with Marlins president of baseball ops, Peter Bendix, about bullpen construction for the last 2 years. Honestly, asked him about it during my initial interview. I was like, how the heck do you construct a bullpen? Because you're awesome at it. And he just has a fascinating approach to bullpen construction. I think Daniel Moskis, the Marlin pitching coach, is one of the best in Major League Baseball at this point.
Yep.
What he can get out of guys is just absolutely insane. Their pitching infrastructure is awesome, and it's guiding them to this right now.
I know that, I mean, to me, and you can do this with a few other teams, what's so cool about it in some ways is that you haven't gotten the best from the guys that were most hyped coming into the season, whether that is Yuri Perez, whether that is Jacob Marcy. And frankly, right, like you talk about that bullpen, the closer you sign, Pete Fairbanks, has a 6.6 ERA. I know the peripherals are a little bit better than that, but it's a lot of the other guys leading up to that have really stepped up. And to your point, I mean, they're 7th in bullpen ERA, 1st in hits allowed per nine, 4th in whip, 4th in K per nine. So even with Fairbanks having a few blow-up outings, like, they have been incredible. I think the two guys I really just want to make sure we zoom in on before we let you go, let's just go back to Otto Lopez for a second. Some people might hear that and be like, what do you mean? That's crazy. What do you mean? Why should he be starting the All-Star game at shortstop? We know, although, man, if this had happened a week ago, you probably could have gotten all of Scotland to be voting for Otto Lopez, and he would have more votes than C.J. Abrams and Trey Turner and Ellie De La Cruz. And so, you know, the voting is not looking great in his favor. But, I mean, he does have a real case. He's certainly ahead of C.J. Abrams in terms of the WAR because his defense is so much better. His base running is incredible. And he's having this breakout offensive season where it's, yeah, sure, he doesn't have the home runs, but everything else has just been incredible. So Otto's been there for a few years now. What has been the leap forward for him that you've kind of witnessed?
It's contact quality for him. Like, he's just hitting the ball harder all the time right now. And when you look at, you know, year by year batting average jump, that's going to be huge, obviously. When you look at year by year average exit velocity jumps and year by year hard hit rate jumps, Otto Lopez is right in there with pretty much anybody else in Major League Baseball. And I'm not saying he was a light hitting shortstop last year, but he was one of those slap the ball around the ballpark guys. And the 330 clip would indicate that he still is that, right? The only guy in Major League Baseball with 100 base hits at this point, that would indicate that. But it's just not really the case. Like, all of a sudden, you see him turn on a pitch and drive at 113 miles an hour, and it one hops the wall and left. And it's like, I had no idea Otto Lopez had that in him. It has been a conscious effort to improve his swing speed. The swing speed jump for Otto Lopez has been amazing to watch, and the Marlins have been kind of at the forefront of their swing speed training. They have the overwhelming majority of their guys on a bat speed program, and Otto Lopez has been doing diligent work with that, and he's been swinging the bat harder. He's been hitting the ball way harder, and there are some mechanical changes, like he's getting into that back hip a little bit more. He's counter-rotating a little bit more, but offensively, he's just hitting the ball with way more authority, and he was already really good defensively, man. Like, it just felt like when you look at the value, I think Liam Hicks is another really good example. Liam Hicks did so many good things offensively. What did he not do well? Hit the ball hard, hit the ball in the air to the pull side. So what did the Marlins have him do? Put on about 15 pounds of muscle, eat beef and rice constantly, and then just swing the bat harder. And it's resulted in 13 homers and 50-something RBIs right at this point. For Otto, it's like
when you have guys like that, when guys like that, like, you can trust that they're going to find the barrel. Otto Lopez has been, you know, hitting the baseball and not missing the baseball for his entire life. Unfortunately, for years, it wasn't coming off with any kind of zest or verve. Now it is, right? And it is a really interesting way to think about hitting development, comparing him to a guy like Casey, where you're coming at this from a completely different end of the spectrum. Like Lopez, it's, does he have the physicality to be an impact hitter? Let's get him on a bat speed program. For Casey, it's like, just make any contact and the ball is probably going to go pretty far. And it seems cool that to me that the Marlins are doing both of those things well.
And they've got a path to like better swing decisions for a guy like Casey. So yeah, the contact rate's going to be lower than Otto Lopez. But Clayton McCullough, the manager of the Marlins, he's huge with Casey and Stowers on. You can't be chasing up and down. You got to pick a place to maybe expand your zone. Like, you can't be going above the zone and below the zone. So with Stowers, he was getting fastballs up, splitters down. Casey was getting fastballs up, breaking balls down. And now it just seems like they're laying off one. Like, they are so hell-bent on a certain approach every time they step into the box. And that's been really cool. So it's really an approach conversation with guys like Stowers and Casey. Hey, let's get your A swing off on optimal pitches as often as we possibly can. And then with guys like Otto and Edwards and Hicks, it's, we trust you to make the right decisions. We trust you to put bat on Paul. Let's just get really angry when we swing the baseball bat. And all three guys have done that exceptionally well.
Dude, when I was coaching Little League, I used to do something called the Serena Williams drill, where I would have kids grunt loudly when they swung. Because I do think that actually trying harder, especially with kids who are just trying to make contact, is like a legitimately helpful thing. Before we let you go, we have to talk about Max Meyer. If the National League Cy Young race wasn't a, you know, circus of dominance, his name would be right up there with the Mizorowskis and the Sanchez's and the Burns and the Sales. Maybe it should be. Still, Max Meyer, number 3 overall pick, number of years ago, dealt with a lot of injuries. This is what this organization and the fan base and Max Meyer himself was waiting for all these years. What has allowed him to finally take that leap forward?
Before I answer that question, let me counter your question with a question of my own to the both of you. If the Marlins happen to be in the American League, is he second in the American League Cy Young race right now, only to Schlittler?
Ooh, I mean, yeah, probably. I think, right, it's Joe Ryan, it's Detmers. He's right in that conversation. It's unfortunate because that group is just, by comparison, so much less amazing. But hey, if we're talking about all-stars, I expect Max Meyer to be named.
I am a sucker for innings. Mm-hmm. And so I might throw Parker Missick over him, which is maybe insulting considering the K to walk, I understand, but like, I'm old school in that regard. However, your point is seen and heard that the imbalance of pitching quality in these two leagues will hurt someone like Meyer in the eventual Cy Young voting, because his numbers, just on paper, if you compare them to like any Cy Young finalist season, right up there, 90 innings, over 16 starts with a 2.8 ERA and 10.2 Ks per nine.
Also, I just want to add one more thing statistically. Like, I am obsessed with him not having a loss. I think that now we've spent so much time just discounting pitcher wins and losses. And every once in a while, we have a stat like this. Like, I was obsessed with the reverse of this for Tanner Bibee, how he didn't get a win in his first 15 starts or whatever. And I was like, this is amazing. Like, this is a record that I've tracked over the years for certain pitchers. Now he's been, you know, undefeated. I know they have lost when he has started, But it does speak to that he's given him a damn good chance every time out there. So, yeah, as Jake said, like, this is not – sure, we've had the injuries, but he also made 20-plus starts over the last 2 years, and his ERA was not anywhere close to what it is now. So what is the difference?
Okay, so the big difference, and to your point about the win-loss record, I'm kind of a sucker for it too. I was just thinking the other day, I was like, is pitcher record back? I don't think it's back, but it could get close to being back.
Let's bring it back.
I still think there's value in the 20-game winner, although Kyle Wright kind of rained on that parade a little bit.
Yes. Oh, wow. Kyle Wright catching strays. All right. Good.
But yes.
Max Meyer, back to back.
Yes. No, Max Meyer, man. I it's amazing. And, you know, you can talk about the 8-0 record. They're 12-4 in Meyer starts this year. He's near the top of baseball in terms of run support, which has been really nice for that. But in terms of what he's doing on the mound, it's probably the best breaking ball combination in Major League Baseball. And before you say, whoa, hold on, let me just lay this out. Like, there are fewer than 10 extra base hits against his slider and his sweeper combo. I think he's punched out like 80 guys with those two pitches, and it's just one home run against those two pitches. Max Meyer, what he does with the slider and sweeper, which he throws like combination about 55% of the time on any given start, is it's a slider at like 91, 92 that doesn't break as much horizontally as your standard slider and will drop a little bit more than your standard slider. And then a sweeper off of that, kind of the same thing, harder than your standard sweeper. I've seen him throw some at 90 miles an hour, and it drops a little bit more vertically than your standard sweeper, and it doesn't break as much horizontally as your standard sweeper. So not only is it a weird look movement profile wise, but it's way harder than you would expect a breaking ball to be. And that allows him to do a couple of different things with it. Number one, it started at the knees and drop it to the shins or the ankles, right? So he can go strike to ball, he can get chase below the zone as well as pretty much anybody. He can throw it in the strike zone and still get bite. The thing that jumped out to me last year in year one of the job for me was that guy can backdoor a slider to a lefty better than anybody in baseball. Usually you'll just flatten it out a little bit if you leave a breaking ball arm side, right? Like it'll spin a little bit and it'll just kind of flutter to the outside corner against lefties. That's not really the case with Max. Like, you still see a very sharp downer bite on those breaking balls that clip the outside edge against a lefty. And it's a near impossible pitch if he's got it. And he punched out 14 against Cincinnati last year. And he did that with backdoor breaking balls to lefties. So for Meyer, man, I really do think it's all about the breaking balls. Fastball's gotten a little bit better. Like, he's added a couple inches of induced vertical break to it, which is nice. Like, you get a little bit more carry at the top of the zone, which is cool to really dork out on you. And the changeup has been good to lefties. But that breaking ball combination for Meyer and the way he's been able to command it has been diabolical this year.
Jack, you are a wonderful man. Having you on has been a delight, a true joy of my day. People can find your work every single Marlins game on the radio. Jack is doing all 162. It is a remarkable thing. I am envious of your energy and your focus and your enthusiasm. People can also find you talking about Not the Marlins on the Just Baseball Show, a wonderful podcast that I listen to on an occasional basis. Jack, thank you so much for joining us. Is there anything else you'd like to get off your chest before we release you to some wonderful day baseball?
I have cherished every moment of this conversation with you guys. I appreciate you. No, we got to do a bit of a home and home. I want you guys on the Just Baseball Show very soon. So that'll be fun. And you made the comp before we hit the record button to Matt Olson. And I like that. I think me and Matt Olson have a lot.
Well, you
every day, let's put your head down.
Just post. Hey, just post.
Let's be fair, though. Xavier Edwards, I believe, has also played in every game. I don't know if he started every game.
He's not.
Baseball reference is telling me he has, but maybe he has not started every game.
Someone's lying.
Yeah. I'm seeing Xavier Edwards 80 games played, Marlins 80 games played, but maybe Baseball Reference is lying to me. So
you know what? I think twice he came on as like a late game defensive replacement. So, you know what? So he's there every day.
He's there. He's the only one that I see in 88 is Otto Lopez, slacker.
You know who doesn't, late as a defensive replacement? Jack freaking McMullen. Every pitch, baby, in your ear holes. Jack, enjoy your day. We'll talk to you very soon.
Thank you, Jack.
Welcome back to Baseball Barbacast. Before we get out of here, we need to talk about Buster Posey. Buster Posey should know better. Yesterday, the San Francisco Giants president of baseball operations addressed the media for the first time since San Francisco's Pride Night kerfuffle heard around the world. I don't want to get into the weeds of the specifics there. Players wrote on their hats. The league said that the Giants didn't properly inform them. J.D. Vance, the vice president, tweeted about it. It went from a story to a national story to a total inferno for this team. And with them being at home for the first time since, let's call it Pride Hat Gate exploded, Posey was set to face the music. And instead of facing the music, he dodged it. He sat down for a scrum with members of the local media on Tuesday before the game, opened with a statement that said almost nothing. I'll just read the first sentence of it. I'd like to recognize that the organization has shared its response to Pride Night, and I understand there's strong feelings on the topic. There's differing perspectives. Out of respect to everyone involved, it's not something that I'm going to revisit. He wanted to focus only on baseball questions. He was asked a question about Rafael Devers' recent insubordination and then was understandably asked about Pride Night, to which he responded that he wanted to focus on baseball. Quote, I mentioned I'm not going to revisit it. If you want to ask baseball questions, I'll answer baseball questions. He then received a number of additional probes about Pride Night. After each one, he said, I want to focus on baseball. You can ask me baseball questions. It got very uncomfortable, very awkward. A member of the Giants PR staff had to step in and effectively threaten to end the press conference if baseball questions were not pivoted to. The entire thing was a fiasco, an embarrassment, and one that frankly placated absolutely no one. It was purposeless. It was useless. And at most, it was incredibly bizarre for a player, a person, an individual that made his name, his legend, his millions in San Francisco. This is not an idiot or an interloper. This is someone that is intimately familiar with the Bay Area and certainly understands San Francisco's place as one of the most, if not the most, vibrant and crucial an essential queer city in the country. And for him to approach this situation with such a dismissive attitude was mind-blowing. And just like, what did he think was going to happen? Like, how did he think this was going to play out?
That's the thing. From a PR standpoint, what was the strategy? I think we should first acknowledge to the statement that he's referencing from the beginning, right? He's referring back to a statement that the Giants have put out since this situation has elevated to a level that we expected. And I think that statement from the Giants, which I'm just going to read this one here now, because the statement from the Giants is at least striking a tone of trying to reach out and much more of a, we see this being a problematic. Now, it's not, I'm not saying the statement is perfect, but I do think that there's parts of the statement compared to what Posey prepared is pretty stark and different. The Giants putting out saying, the Giants are proud to support Pride Night LGBTQ plus community. Baseball should be a place where everyone feels welcome, respected, and valued. We also respect that individuals may make personal choices about participating in team activations. We understand that the choices by individual players has caused pain and anger to many in the LGBTQ plus community, and we are sorry for that. Those choices do not change our organization's commitment to inclusion, belonging, and creating a welcoming environment for all. We remain grateful to our fans, partners, employees, players, and coaches who help make Pride Night a meaningful celebration. Now, I know that that is still, to a lot of people, a kind of
there's a word salad there. There's a word salad there, but acknowledging that the actions were hurtful and painful for people that love to their core this organization, this institution, that is a good thing, right?
Yep.
However, what happened yesterday did not yes. reflect that sentiment. No. And that is the problem, right?
And I can't, and this is the part where I just can't understand what the hope was here. And the part of his statement that I just can't get over is, I mean, you know, there's a lot here. But out of respect to everybody involved, it's not something I'm going to revisit. Is not how I... That is probably not how you are respecting anybody by saying, out of respect, I'm not going to talk about this anymore. And to just... And to do the classic, like, man, everyone's got different opinions. Sorry, I'm just the baseball guy. Listen, I think it's just relevant. It's what you said. This is a different conversation. I mean, this should be relevant in every city in America, and this should be something that people are standing up for everywhere. And I of course, believe that. Yeah. But it's just unbelievable that someone could be in San Francisco for this long and then shove this to the side. Now, it is a tough spot for Buster Posey. I'm not feeling bad for him, but if you are, clearly he thought that people would empathize with him being the baseball guy that doesn't know how to talk about this stuff. But when this situation has risen to this level, you got to be more prepared. You got to be more respectful, and also just have a better plan than this. If this is I just can't believe that this was constructed and prepared and presented and thought it was like, yes, we nailed this.
He is so familiar with this media group, and I'm not like criticizing that the reporters at all, but I'm just saying, like, did he think that these people that he spent 15 years around weren't going to inquire about this? These people were just going to let him skate by with that punchless opening statement? No, of course not. These people are good at their job. Like, it was very, very odd to me that he thought it would play, right? Like, Buster Posey is not an idiot. And I think that if you want to dodge this, if you want to try and skirt your way around it, then why are you having Posey be the first person to publicly address it? Right. Yes, like,
that's the bigger question.
Because that's what Buster Posey is now. He is the face of this organization, and he was hired to lead the baseball operations group, not just because the team thought he was good at baseball operations, because we didn't even know if he was good, and he might not actually turn out as not very good, but because he was Buster freaking Posey, and he meant something to the place, and he meant something to the people, and he meant something to the fan base. And there is a certain segment of that fan base that now thinks less of him and whose opinion of his legend has been diminished because of how he conducted himself yesterday. And that, above anything else, is sad. It is sad and it is disappointing. Yeah. And I think that there is legitimate frustration today for people that love the San Francisco Giants and are gay. That is many people.
Yep. Yep. And that's the thing. It's not that I am expecting Buster Posey to have all the answers and to be a perfect spokesperson, but the reason I brought up that giant statement is just like, I can't believe that this amount of this kind of this tone and this strategy of shutting it down and dismissiveness, I just can't believe that's what was chosen. And to your point, there is a bigger question worth raising of, if this has gotten to this point, why is this his responsibility? I mean, we've had versions of this conversation in much more baseball-specific things, like we've talked about with the Red Sox, where it's like Sam Kennedy's the one that has to keep going out there and speak, when everyone's like, dude, this is John Henry. Why haven't we heard from John Henry? Why haven't we heard from, like, that is the person making the calls who's really responsible for this lapse in communication, which MLB is referring to. Is there someone else that should be speaking on behalf here, as opposed to Posey seemingly thinking he was taking responsibility or saying, and instead ending up doing very much the opposite, which brings us to, I think, the last point here, the and irony is not the right word, but it is kind of, it's like, yeah, I'd rather talk about baseball. Oh yeah, by the way, our team stinks.
You do?
And so that just adds to it.
Don't
it
pay attention.
It's not the most important thing here, but it's a part of this.
Sure. Well, and it just makes it goofy. It provides it with a sense of comic irony where it's like, please don't pay attention to the fire, you know, decimating my living room. Check out the one in the kitchen. You know, like, please, let's talk about baseball. You sure? You really want to do that? Because that's not going particularly well either. Hey. And
yeah, Well, we're not going to talk. I mean, we could do another 10 minutes on Devers and what happened with Devers, that yesterday and the Giants continuing to be bad. And just like, I don't really want to, but there's other problems involving communication and leadership. And this is the thing. We're talking about this, how sad this is. And right. The Giants record is not as important as the context of inclusivity and the importance of pride in this city, sure, obviously. That said, that we are at this point in this season, that this is where this organization is, this model franchise that was winning and winning and winning, and just couldn't, everything they were doing was just, it meant something to a lot of this fan base, this city.
Stood for a thing.
And now we're just like, where are we? Where are we? And it's like, how do we get this back on track? Well, the whole point was like, Buster Posey's going to bring it back. Buster Posey's going to, he's going to defend San Francisco. He's going to explain why San Francisco is special, because if anyone can understand that, it's him. But if he's not able to represent it in an effective and respectful manner, I don't know who we're going to next. Travis Ishikawa, come on down.
He's so, working there. I think he's like, he's in the complex. I think he's working in the complex.
Oh, okay.
I mean, so much of what made Posey like the, in some people's minds, the right guy to lead the line here, to be the head of this group, is that he had throughout his career conducted himself with humility and class and professionalism, and was a leader. And I think what we saw yesterday is that the weight of that has won. Like, he was hired to restore them to prominence and respectability because he was a steady hand. Instead, he looks like a character like that's overwhelmed by the weight of actually having to lead, and that is just a freaking bummer. And I think, like, look, Jordan, like, I think there is a longer conversation to be had about wearing the pride hats and whether the impact of visibility is worth the trade-off of giving homophobes a cudgel with which to attack the gay community. Like, is this worth it? Do pride nights with uniforms make people happy? Like, I guess what I'm saying is, like, I'm going to go to the Nats pride night tonight. There will be celebrations. It will be a great atmosphere. It will mean a lot to a lot of people. The Nats are not going to wear the rainbow flag hat or have something on their uniform, in part because then you're not putting players in a position to make fools of themselves. Like, is that worth it? The uniform thing. Maybe for some, and I think it's like an interesting conversation. We got a really interesting email about this where you could see both sides of that argument, that the visibility is important on one hand, but on the other, like, then you're just giving Josh Hawley a platform on which to talk. And it's like, plays into the larger culture war of people shoving things down people's throat. You see what I'm saying? And so, I don't know there. Like, I'm also maybe not the person to have that conversation. I recognize that. But I think in future years, we could see some changes because of how bad this got. But at the end of the day, my biggest feeling is disappointment towards Buster Posey, who just looked small yesterday. Even if you're like, hell yeah, Landon Rupp, did you watch yesterday and think strong performance from Buster Posey? No.
And even if you did, you know what I mean? Even if you did for some reason, then you listen to him talk about how bad the team is. So, like, if you're a sub Giants fan, that's like, oh, I'm glad these guys are. Yeah. No, I obviously agree with
bad.
A lot of what you said. And I weirdly,
they won,
I guess
last
this
night,
feels
though.
Like the story's over, but they did win. Great. Congrats to Robbie Ray. But if we're in, as always with topics like this, like, if we're totally off the mark here, like, let us know. We want to hear from, especially
also,
people
you don't,
in the queer community. And
listen, and if you don't like it when we talk about, you know, politics and the intersection of baseball, I think one of the reporters yesterday said this, like, this has been made about baseball. Like, this is now a baseball story because they wore the uniforms. You know what I mean? And I think, like, at the end of the day, you just have to, just don't be a freaking weirdo, man. Just treat people with respect. Like lead with empathy. Think about how people who don't feel comfortable at ballparks feel, And like, that's all you, like, that's square one. Let's start at square one, right? And we can hopefully go from there. But we just, you want more people to like this thing that is baseball. And when people don't feel comfortable there, like, one of the things that really pissed me off about, like, what Josh Hawley wrote was the idea that, like, I think he wrote to Manfred, like, Christians are being systematically, like, discriminated against within the sport of baseball, which is the most laughable thing of all time. Right?
Yep.
If you've spent, and I'm not, like, saying that people shouldn't wear their faith on their sleeve. Like, I think in a certain way that that can be cool and that can be empowering. And I like to talk to players about their faith as a Jewish guy. But, like, faith and being a queer ally, those are not incompatible dynamics. I've talked long enough. I was up late thinking and writing about this, and it just really ticked me off. So we will now talk about the College World Series and then, you know, let people carry on with their day.
Yes, we can do that. I am in Phoenix, Arizona for the MLB Draft Combine, and I'll give a couple minutes on that. But before that, we have to put a bow on the college baseball season. The Oklahoma Sooners, national champs for the third time ever, first time since 1994. We have never lived on this earth with the Oklahoma Sooners as champions of the Division I baseball world. Do not remember 1994 because we were not there. I also do not remember 1951, which was another national title for the Oklahoma baseball team. But that is ancient baseball history and very different than achieving this in the year 2026. This was an unbelievable run for a team that finished 11th in the SEC in the regular season, came into the postseason with a good RPI because they played in the SEC and they had some good players, but they were a team that nobody was thinking about as particularly relevant for a postseason run. And then they went into Atlanta, upset Georgia Tech, went into Kansas. So this just incredible. They upset Georgia Tech, ACC double champions. They go to Lawrence, they upset Kansas, Big 12 double champions. They go to Omaha, they beat Georgia, SEC double champions. By double champion, I mean win the tournament, win the regular season. And then they make it all the way to the finals against UNC, and people are still like, yeah, I don't think they can do it. UNC's better. And nope. Sooners stay hot, even after dropping game two, after winning game one. They just completely blow them out, and their three-week heater of a lifetime is complete, and they're national champs. It's one of the most amazing stories I've seen since watching this sport.
So they win Monday night. I head to post-game clubhouse with the Nats after they win on Monday night. And the Nats have two starters in their rotation that pitched Oklahoma, Jake Irvin and Cade Cavalli.
Mm-hmm.
And they like come out as the media's in there and they're like hooting and hollering. And I see like Cade Cavalli, who spoke to the team in February, like went to Norman like gave the opening speech to like fire up the team. And like Jake Irvin's got tears in his eyes. You know, he hasn't pitched there for almost a decade. And you just look at what it means to him. You know, like it was so cool to like see how that sticks with people. Because I remember when my college team, my D3 team, made the World Series after I left, and you feel 0.00000001% responsible for helping to set a culture. And to see that on the big league side was cool. And then Skip Johnson, who's the head coach there, who has been a character in our sport, I mean, for a long time, who helped build Clayton Kershaw. Go read Andy McCullough's book, Last of His Kind. Like, Skip Johnson is a crucial character in just like the history of modern pitching development as well. Someone that's really beloved around the sport, and I'm happy that he got his moment in the sunshine. Jordan, do you want to do a combine update today, or you want to kick that to Friday after you talk to some more folks today in Arizona?
I'll do longer on Friday. I'm just going to say one thing from the combine, and then we'll say goodbye. This is not anything new. We've referred to versions of like the velocity normalization, but we had the first day of on-field workouts yesterday, and only a select number of the pitchers that come here actually throw in the mound. A lot more of the kids participate, in the BP and the infield and outfield drills and whatnot. But the mound session was about 10 pitchers, and there were three guys that went up there. These are not like definite first round picks. This is his kid. Ethan Waxman from Colorado, Tyler Putnam from Missouri, Grayson Willoughby from Kentucky. And they just are get up there in the mound, and they're just humming in there at 99. And these guys are like fourth to sixth round. Like, they're probably going to go to school. And I'm just sitting there in the scout section watching these kids just ease in, just get up there and huck 99. Waxman up to 100, and I'm just like, what? How did we get here this quickly? It was not long ago when a high school kid throwing 100 would be news. It would be news, and now these kids are just showing up and doing it, and we're like, yeah, he's pretty good.
It was like, news last year incredible. With Jack Bauer, right? Like,
well, that's
now that was from the left side, and it was 102. Yeah, like, I understand, yeah. But still, like, yes. Triple digits is triple digits. That is really, really remarkable.
It's really something. I'm still, even watching so much baseball and covering amateur baseball and college baseball, I'm still adjusting to it and being like, wow. And I can only imagine how the people that have covered the draft, like Jim Callis, who have covered the draft for 30 years when 95 used to be cool, that I can imagine what it's like for them to be like, wait a minute, should I care about Tyler Putnam now because he just threw 99? Who is to say? I'll do more Combine on Friday. But until then, thank you to Andrew Hartz and Stone Rochelle for producing. Thank you to Jack McMullen for joining us to recap the Tartan Army at Lone Depot. Hopefully Jack and the Scots can work in some hydration breaks in between all their beers.
That is what a hydration break is. Every time that I've had a beer in my hand and I'm watching the World Cup and there's a hydration break, I have to finish it. That's the rule.
Yeah.
That's what a hydration break truly is. I just want to acknowledge, Jordan, that last night I watched one of the most preposterous baseball games of the season at Nats Park, if I may. The Phillies, down to their final strike, then proceeded to score 8 runs with 2 outs. The hell? It was a very interesting night at Nats Park because the buzz was there. Like, you remember when Bryce stole home against the Phillies in 2012? Sure. And it felt like the start of a thing. It was like, oh, this team is here. A lot of Phillies fans in attendance. Nats actually lost that game, but it like felt like something. Last night at the yard, beautiful evening, Phillies in town, Nats playing well. Kind of felt like that for 8 2/3 until the Phillies were like, ah, not so fast. And it was just a good reminder that the Washington Nationals, while they're overperforming, are ahead of schedule, and they do not have a bullpen capable of actually being where they need to be. The fact that this was their second worst blown lead in the last 2 weeks says a lot, right?
I think
quickly on Brandon Marsh,
who
delivered the big swing last night. It's been really cool to watch Brandon Marsh turn into this. Like, you remember when the Phillies first acquired him in the middle of the 2022 season, like, on that club that ends up winning the NL title, he's like a bit. He's a shtick. He's barking at people and pouring water on his head and howling and speaking in cryptic sentences. And he is more of a caricature than he is a baseball player, right? And guess what? He's still kind of that guy, but he has matured into like a difference-making bat for this Phillies team. Now, he was a big prospect when they acquired him, or like had prospect pedigree and was a second round pick, two-sport athlete. He's built like an SEC wideout. Like, he is a really physical guy, and he's always struggled against lefties, and he had a little bit too much chase. He launches the ball at optimal angles better right now than anybody in the sport. He's leading the league in launch angle sweet spot percentage, and that is kind of been a product of him not chasing because he can be more fine to pitches in the zone and better counts. And I'm just happy for that dude. He's one of my favorite personalities in the sport. And to see him have a moment like he did last night, fills down to their last out, 2-run game tying bomb. Like, he's going to be at the All-Star game and he very well may start.
Yeah, that would be one of the cooler hometown selections that we've seen in quite a while. Good for Brandon Marsh. All right, we're done. Thank you all for listening. We'll be back on Friday. Email us, baseballbarbiecast@gmail.com. Thank you again to Andrew and Stone for producing. Talk to y'all soon.